Hey folks, James here. I'm just editing the podcast, and for reasons I won't spoil unrelated to the show, we've changed our recording setup a little bit, and I just noticed now that my mic really doesn't sound that great this episode, so my apologies, we are working on it, and it should be better for next time, but I just wanted to get out in front of that and just say this here. So anyway, thanks a lot, and enjoy the show. Everyone, and welcome to the show. I'm James, that's Katie, and of course that makes this episode 40 of Circles and Squares on a lovely Friday evening. Kate, how are you? Welcome to the show.
I'm good. It's nice to be done the week. It's a beautiful, dark Friday night because it's winter now. How are you?
Things change quick, eh? I'm good. You know, I did a lot of work. I'm just doing some design work right now, you know, for school, and it's going really well. I'm getting near the end of a huge project I've been working on. So I feel pretty accomplished. I'm looking forward to playing some games this weekend, you know, all the good stuff. I'm good though. We got a busy show here, right? We got some stuff off the top for housekeeping to talk about. Not the least of which, do you remember way back on one of our early episodes? If memory serves me right, number 17, we had a guest, Kate. Do you remember that guest name?
Was it like, Marty or Melvin or no, it was Michael, of course.
it was Michael. Yes, everyone, if you remember Mike back from the Pokemon episode we did, one of my best friends, one of our best listeners, as you guys know, this guy has recently got into streaming, and he's big into games like Enter the Gungeon. He was playing Hades on stream a couple times last week, and it was a good time hanging out in the chat, watching him go through, experience Hades for the first time, a game Kate and I both really love a lot. And he's working his way. Once he gets up to 50 subscribers on Twitch, he's going to start doing Dark Souls kind of challenge runs. I know, Kate, you'd be looking forward to watching some of that. So we just wanted to give him a shout out here on Twitch. If you want to go give him a follow, his links will all be down in the show notes. But his Mr. Del Monster over on Twitch, and please go give him a follow. Mike's a great guy, and he supports the hell out of our show. So I would love to do the same for him. So please check him out. He's a great dude. And the second part of housekeeping today is that we need some more listener emails, guys. You guys have been writing in a lot for us, and we've answered listener mail pretty much every show we've done up to this point, but we're running low on the mailbag, Kate. So we really need people to get out there and send us some questions or comments or contribute to the conversation we're having on the show. So please look forward to that. Again, circlesandsquarespod@gmail.com for anyone that's got some stuff to write in with for us. And finally, the last item of housekeeping we have today is that you should stick around till the end of the show today, because we have some very special news to share with you all. But we're going to save that just a little longer, right? And let everyone keep guessing just a little bit more. Anyway, Kate, you ready to start talking about some games?
I think so. I think we wait all week for this. Let's do it.
Let's do it. So we will start with the games we've been playing the last couple of weeks, as per usual. Second part of the show, we will talk about a bunch of news that's happened. You know, some really big stuff, some small stuff, all in between. So we'll talk about all of that for the second part. And then for the final segment of the show today, we will be talking about some of our favorite duos in video games, inspired by maybe the first game we're going to be talking about that we've been playing today. So let's get right into it. Of course, this is a PlayStation podcast, Kate, but sometimes, you know, we just got to bend the rules and we got to change it up a little bit. And you and I did just that the last few weeks. We've been working our way through the original Gears of War. For me, I've played a little bit of this before, and you're a first timer. So overall, like, what did you think of this? I would say it's like a modern kind of classic at this point, Gears of War. Like, what's your impression?
You know what? I went into it with not really much expectations. I know it's one of those like highly acclaimed franchises, but it's a pretty old game at this point, and shooters are not really my most experienced genre. So I kind of went in just like hoping to, you know, it's co-op, right? You can't really go too wrong with co-op. But I was actually pretty impressed with Gears of War. I think it holds up surprisingly well, and I'm impressed by how well the co-op is integrated into it, especially knowing that you could just play this campaign solo.
Yeah, of course. And I think the game was originally developed pretty much for solo play for a lot of its development process, and then it kind of shifted towards having some multiplayer partway through. So I think that's pretty interesting because yeah, that's the main takeaway for me too, is like I think when we completed the game, I said one of the things I said to you was like, you know, that was a lot of fun. I think we're actually planning on playing more into the series, but it's the kind of thing that if it was by myself, I probably wouldn't be half as drawn to playing it. Like something about that co-op aspect and even like the team dynamic in general. Like in the game, you're usually in a squad of four people, and sure, most of them are kind of just like very one-dimensional, you know, paper thin kind of personality characters that don't really have a whole ton of depth. But for some reason, it's like kind of endearing to get to be like, oh man, I wonder where like, you know, Cole's at, or like when we have to split up, you and I split up, we both get an NPC with us. It's kind of funny to go back and forth of like who got the better NPC and whatnot. So you really do have like kind of
Always
that
me.
squad mentality. Yeah, it usually is you. That's pretty,
Yeah,
you know,
I always
fair.
get the good guy. I don't know, maybe because you were Marcus, and so you
Well,
were like a slightly higher priority, so you had to get like the slightly crappier person to balance it out.
true, true. Yeah, I had the same impression as you, honestly, though. I thought it held up pretty well overall. I mean, obviously, to point out too, we were playing on the Series X, which does have the frame rate boost and everything for Xbox, so it's not quite the authentic experience, but pretty close. I mean, the game holds up in a lot of ways, I think. There's a few, like the color palette is so from that brown, muddy gray kind of
Oh,
area that
everything
it.
looks like the
Oh.
exact same. Like even, I mean, we'll keep it focused on the first game because it's what we just beat. But we played maybe the first like hour and a half of the second one as well. And even that game, like it's the same thing, the same color palette. Like you're in a forest, and the forest is like brown and gray. Like I don't know if you've ever been outside or where these people live, but that's not what forests look like.
Hey, in
So.
that world, maybe it is. But yeah, everything's brown, gray, or if it's not, you're inside of some, you know, dingy, underlit facility or like in caves underground with very little kind of color. Like, aside from the blue lights on your characters, which is more for being able to tell where everything is or like where your teammates are, more so than actually for anything else. Like, that's really the only color you get a lot of the time. And so, yeah, I'd say that's definitely like, I'm glad games have come past that kind of dingy era that we had to go through with all those games, Rust and like some of the Call of Duty games and this, and everything was just like that back then.
Yeah, it
But
was so like gritty, it had to be so dark and mature otherwise. If it had colors, it was a Nintendo Kids game, and it was not a great look for everything.
that's right. Yeah.
No. I will say too, like just on the focus of visuals, I think the actual like assets were good, and like the quality of them, I think of the actual like modeling was good. It was just some of the art direction, and it did play into the gameplay as my one kind of big complaint, is that a lot of the enemy characters that you fight look extremely similar to the like squad characters that you have. They're like, there's some that are different, they're more like alien, but the humanoid shaped ones, you're all big, burly refrigerator men. Like, that is the size of every character, and it's very clear that it's just like one model and they like change the armor or the face, like plastered on top. But the amount of times, like thank God there's not friendly fire in these games, because the amount of times I would just shoot my friends in the back was
I
way
murdered
too
Ty,
many.
or when we played that first hour of two, I would have murdered Ty like 50 times. I'm pretty sure I shot you in the face like multiple times since we were playing all the time.
Easily,
You're
easily.
so right. And it's not just it's like your squad characters, a lot of the enemies, like you said, all have that same kind of hitbox. They all move the same. You know, they're firing weapons that you also might have, so you can't even differentiate between the gunfire sometimes. Yeah, it's a challenge for sure. And I think jumping off that too with the enemies, my biggest complaint I think would be, I mean, I don't have too many complaints honestly. If you're judging this game in the realm of it came out in 2006, right? Like it's definitely got to be looked at with that lens. But my biggest complaint would just be, there wasn't a whole lot of variety with the enemies either. They were, you know, they're kind of the standard grunt guys. There was a few different variations, but all in all, I think it suffers from that same problem we always talk about with God of War 2018 is like a big example. Is like there just wasn't a lot of enemy variety, and that even included some of the bosses. Like we there's a few boss encounters in the game, maybe five or six total, but I think three of them are that same enemy that you have to lure, that like chases your characters, and you have to lure it into pillars or like run into an open area so you can hit it with the Hammer of Dawn. But we just fought that guy so many times, and we even had to fight him right at the end in that last chapter too, before we got to the final boss and we're on that train, like, do we really need to guide him over there and uncouple that last train car? You know, yes. It just got a little bit redundant with those type of bosses.
It did. I would say I think they like did an okay job of hiding it behind set pieces. Decently well. Cause like the first time you're in a building and you have to get him to knock down walls, and then you're in the train and you have to get him like over to one side so you can detach the car. And it's like, you're doing the same thing, but at least like the context is slightly different, so that saves it from being a big problem. And I think also too, because the game is so short and bite-sized, it doesn't really overstay its welcome. It kind of mitigates that being a flaw. But I definitely agree, I want to see as the series moves on just a little bit more variety in terms of like what you're actually coming up against for each challenge. I will say the standout boss for me was definitely that one that we fought underground. It was that big, like, I always think of it as
the spider
Zerg.
One.
The spider, yeah. I always think of it as Zerg, like, that's what it looks like to me. And you have to, like, get him to open his mouth and shoot him in the mouth. And I wasn't really expecting, like, a puzzle boss to be in the game. I was expecting it more to be that kind of, like, tough guy, like, just bullet sponge, because that's, like, what the atmosphere of the game is. And so I was kind of impressed that there was a little bit more to it than I originally, like, gave it credit for, which
I'm with you too. Yeah. I think that definitely was the highlight boss. There were a few bosses that were more of the bullet sponge variety, I guess. And I mean, that one was too to some extent, but there was just a little bit extra touch to it. And plus, that was also one of the really, really unique enemy designs, which I think when they're at their best, they actually look really awesome. Like the enemy, like the locust for sure, I think are designed much better than the Gears characters themselves, to be honest. Like the Gears guys, any one of them, I guess, is kind of fine. But once you've seen those, one of those big square guys, you know, they're all kind of just different variations. But I think the locusts are actually some really interesting designs. Like that spider thing is legit really creepy. Yeah. And same with like the Reavers, like the flying enemies, those are pretty cool. And then, you know, there's just even like the little guys, you know, they're pretty grotesque looking. And I think they're an interesting kind of faction, especially since they're not like mindless monsters either. You learn they come from sort of a sentient background, or at least their higher ups, I think, are a bit more, you know, intellectual, I guess, than what you'd expect.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we touched a little bit on it, but what did you think of the vibe of the game? Like, Gears has this stereotype of just like, you know, it's this gritty, tough marine kind of thing. And I thought it was really funny, like we were talking, it's almost a bit of a parody of itself at this point. But that almost makes the game charming in a weird way. Mm-hmm. I don't know, like that's how I ended up feeling about it. Like it was just, you were along for this ridiculous ride and the game almost aged in a way where it's like, it's self-aware of how ridiculously like macho it is.
It kind of reminds me of like, I assume the people who watch those like, like the Fast and Furious movies, it's the same kind of like entertainment. Like, you know, it's stupid, but like, you just want to like not take it too seriously and go along for the ride. And I think like, I don't know how much of a joke it was or how serious it was when it was written, but it is so funny. Like, they're such bros the whole time. It's hilarious. Like, we'll just be clearing a room and you'll be in the middle of shooting a couple of the enemies, and your character will like, not joking around, just like 100% genuine, they'll just be like, shit, yeah, when you kill them.
Yeah.
And it's so funny. I think the best quote that they have, and I can't remember if it's, I think it might actually be right at the start of 2, so maybe we'll see if it can top it. But we were playing the other day, and then we were like getting airlifted to like a fight, and there's like a new recruit, and he was asking us like, oh, like, are there going to be a shit ton of like aliens over there? And like a non-rookie, like hardened badass Marcus Phoenix is like, oh, there's going to be 10 shitloads.
Like, yeah, as if that would be something you can say. Like, it's just so ridiculous.
Like, he's so like non-self-conscious. He's so genuinely like, he doesn't even think he's a badass by saying it. He's just so like, that's who he is.
It just is the world. Yeah, it is the world. It's so funny too. Like, there's so many continuity kind of things. Like, why would that guy be joining this brand new guy? Like, can't even hold his gun properly. And here comes like Marcus and Dom, probably the two most amazing people that they have to fight on their side. And like, why would they be squatted up? It just doesn't make any sense. Anyway, like, I got to talk about some of the positives here, though. First of all, I mean, when we got into the game, we were talking about it as, and I said it was kind of a modern classic. And I was really reflecting on this last night as I was kind of getting ready for the show. And, you know, I really think that Gears should deserve to be remembered as really like a pillar of a lot of what games have become, for better or worse. Like, you know, Horde mode, for example, I know it wasn't in Gears 1, but the franchise itself is the first place there was ever kind of a Horde mode that came up. It was in the sequel. And also it really popularized, I don't know if it was first, but they have the active reload mechanic where you can, you know, time pressing the reload button while your this bar goes up when you click it. And if you hit it the timing right, you can make your next round stronger. And also it was really one of the first games to popularize the, like, really overplayed now, but the cover shooter, which was like, you know, run up behind the chest high wall kind of thing, which obviously everyone kind of memes now, but, you know, it's very influential on that era of gaming, like even to today. So I think this game really is rooted in a lot of like modern game design, and I think it doesn't really get recognized for that as much as it should. I don't know if it's because it's like buried on, you know, Xbox, which is maybe second, third fiddle these days, but I mean, it deserves some praise.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I've come out of this experience thinking very highly of Gears of War, which I never did before. And I think you kind of touched on some of it. It's a combination of, it was an Xbox exclusive, which are not, aside from Halo, that's kind of, you know, like, it hasn't really been tarnished in that way. Xbox exclusives are kind of seen as, like, second rate to PlayStation now. And, you know,
well, barring the Bethesda games, of course.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. I mean, Forza stuff, but true, in general, but I think
those are so new, right? They're not really thought of as Xbox exclusive games. It's kind of just Xbox lost the exclusive, so it's like puts something like Gears of War in a negative connotation.
Totally, yeah.
But it doesn't really deserve that, and it is also like seemingly such a generic, like, oh, we're tough guys game on the surface. But you're right, they came up with a lot of subtle creative things that they added into the game. And, like, I love some of the things they added. Like, active reload is such a fantastic mechanic. Like, I was playing some Returnal last night, and that's obviously, like, a big feature of that game. And so now it's kind of put it in that extra little bit of context for me. Is now I'm thinking, oh, it's just like Gears of War. And so I think you're right that it doesn't maybe get all the recognition that it deserves. At least the first game, we'll have to see how the series continues, but I think it's impressive. I think it had some really good set pieces. Like, I think it did a lot. Like, the only thing it's really missing that keeps it from feeling like a modern game is that there's not really any character development or characterization characters. The enemies are by far the most interesting thing story-wise. But it's kind of like when you look back at old, like, God of War, and it's like, you know, like 2015 Kratos versus 2018 Kratos. And it's like, well, we just...
Yeah, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Basically, I'll be interested to see if and when we make it up to, like, you know, Gears 4 and 5, when they were taken over, the Coalition made the two newer games. This is Epic, of course, which is a very interesting point in and of itself, that this is Epic before Fortnite. But I mean, it'll be interesting to see if the games begin to focus more on, you know, the narrative and the story, kind of like a God of War shift, as opposed to this, which was more like, you know, flat action kind of gore, right? And speaking of gore, we haven't talked about the chainsaw. This, of course, is another defining feature of Gears of War, is the chainsaw bayonet. And I don't know about you, but I find it extremely satisfying to just rip guys apart with this. It's just like good kind of video game fun, as long as you're not squeamish. But yeah, the chainsaw is just, I love that, using that gun for some reason. It doesn't get old either. Like, you don't get to use it all the time.
No, it didn't get old. I was excited every time I got to chainsaw someone, and I was excited every time I looked over and I saw you chainsawing someone, because you get to watch it in both ways. I will say it felt a little bit finicky every now and again to get the chainsaw started. I found if, like, you had a different gun and you swapped out quickly and tried to start it, it, like, wouldn't always be 100% responsive. But, like,
yeah, it's like you couldn't always pull it out quickly, like, it, unless you already had it out when you saw an enemy, it was hard to always get it to work.
It could be a little finicky, but, like, it's way more positive than it is negative. And I think my favorite part of playing the game would be like, okay, we clear a room, we're gonna go in the next room, and both of us just, like, rev the chainsaw and walk through the door with it up.
There was some of those situations, like when we were in that train near the end too, and you're, like, you know, going through, you're like, I know these little guys are in here, and you just hear, like, rum, 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 like these chainsaws. It's hilarious. It's hilarious. But yeah, I mean, I had a good time overall. Like, there's the other stuff too. Like, I think you touched on earlier, like the splitting up parts, which I thought were really fun, where, you know, it'll be like, do you want to go on the rooftops or through the store? And I would go on the rooftop. So I would be kind of watching you from above with a sniper, and then it would turn around, so you'd be defending me later on, and before we met up. And I thought that stuff is really where the game shines the most, because it makes you feel like you actually are able to support each other. Like, you know, you're getting attacked by enemies, I can literally shoot them for you from afar. You know, it really requires that kind of teamwork, I guess, in a way. Like, I don't know how important it is, or if it maybe just makes you feel like you're really helping, but I'm sure you are in a lot of ways. So it's just a cool little co-op bonus, I guess, rather than just running through the same area all the time.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder if you just are playing single player, I guess you just pick a path and you just go down that path yourself.
I would imagine so, and the NPCs would just be visible. Yeah. Just the same way, I guess. I don't know. Makes sense. That's a good question.
It really does feel like the game is designed for two players, which is impressive if it was just like an added-on feature. But yeah, overall, I had a great time. I'm excited for Gears 2. It's probably not something, like you said, I would play on my own. But it is a really fun, just kind of like, oh, we got a couple hours, let's do something kind of like silly and just exciting. And yeah, it's a good time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, interested to see how the other games hold up. I played quite a bit of 2, so I'm looking forward to going back through that. And then when we get to 3 and beyond, I think it'll be a mystery for us both. So we will maybe do a little Xbox special in the future and talk about those as well. But that's it for Gears of War, I think, Kate. Although you've also been playing something else called Vigil the Longest Night, which I know literally nothing about this, so please.
Okay. Well, unlike Gears of War, this is very much more a Katie game. This is one of those like 2D Souls games. If you're picturing in your mind, picture it. I don't know if you've seen Salt and Sanctuary, but it looks...
Of course, yeah, definitely.
It's very similar to Salt and Sanctuary, with the only difference being it's not co-op, so I've been playing it on my own. It's kind of got like the light Metroidvania and platforming elements, but it's definitely more combat focused. And so far I'm really enjoying it so far. The game reminds me a lot of Bloodborne, which in fact, it's funny, you get at the very early in the game, the first shop, like an hour in, you get this really cheap hat you can buy, and it's the hat, like the quintessential hunter hat from Bloodborne. And it's got a cute little item description, just says, this looks familiar. So of course I picked that up, but it does like a similar kind of atmosphere to Bloodborne. It's got that sort of unsettling, it's mysterious, there's this kind of like plague that's spreading and creating monsters, and some of the areas about a little bit of like a Lovecraft kind of feel. So definitely I think takes very heavy inspiration from Bloodborne specifically, and it probably also helps that like where I'm currently playing, I'm in this like ship / like dockyard kind of flooded area, and it's giving me like really hardcore fishing hamlet vibes, like to the point where like I found the boss and it's not Orphan of Cause, but I would not have been surprised if he just jumped out of nowhere.
It was just straight up Orphan of Cause.
Yes. It's not, but you know, I there was like a non-zero possibility that was going to be the case. But yeah, so
I really like the art style of this game. I'm looking at some pictures right now, and like the Eldritch kind of evil. It looks really kind of, yeah, it's off-putting.
It is gorgeous. It's kind of going for that like hand-drawn, like painted kind of style.
Yeah, off-putting. I mean, the creatures, the art's beautiful.
Oh,
I want to clarify.
Yeah, the art is gorgeous. The creatures are like absolute abominations, and they only get like progressively more unpleasant as you go and the game progresses. So that's another like Bloodborne kind of aspect. At first, you're fighting like humanoid kind of creatures, and then they're progressing to like horrible squid monsters. And so I'm excited to see what like the second half of the game has in store for me, because if I had to guess, I'd say I'm roughly halfway, maybe just under.
And how long you been playing for?
I've been playing for about maybe 15 hours now.
Oh, so it's pretty
like
long.
Wow. Yeah, I think maybe not quite that much, maybe like that 10 or 12, but I've gotten a decent chunk in. It's just sort of been, you know, taking up my entire week pretty much. But to go off of the visuals, because it's, and one other thing I want to mention for the style of this game is the music is fantastic. The music is amazing. Each area has its own theme, and it's like full proper instruments. They've got like piano sections and like this amazing guitar that goes throughout the whole game. So it's, and I looked it up, it's actually, and I never heard of this band. I've looked them up, and I was listening to them all day at work today. They're awesome. It's this metal band called Whispered, and they're a Finnish metal band, but they have like strong Japanese influence to their music.
Oh, interesting.
So they're super cool. You I think would like them. They're called Whispered.
I gotta check them out. Yeah.
But one of the band members actually did the soundtrack for this game, so that's why it's so like, it's so incredibly good. But to the point where like sometimes I'll just like pause the game and like jam out to the music a little bit. I'm like, oh, I gotta check my phone or something, and I'll just like, my head will be bobbing along. So the presentation is fantastic in this game.
Yeah, I really like the way that it looks. I'm watching a video right now. I gotta say, like, the only thing is I'm getting a little off put by the way, this watching videos while we're podcasting so I can see what you're doing. Great idea. This is fun. But the character, like, seems to move a little stiffly with the jumps and everything. Is the only thing I can maybe
see. You know what's funny is I totally see why you'd think that just watching. The animations are not incredibly fluid, but it actually feels solid to play. And I'm contrasting that to another game I'm currently playing right now is Bloodstained: Ritual of the Night, which is a great game. It's like a more of like a Castlevania kind of.
That's more like a one-to-one like Castlevania.
Yeah, exactly. It's more like a Castlevania. Yeah. But they're similar kind of games. They're like 2D and they're like fighting and platforming and Metroidvania elements. Although that one's a bit more of like a true Metroidvania. This one's a little bit more like Souls inspired. Yeah. But just comparing how the two games feel with quite a similar control setup, this game feels so much better. It might look a little bit awkward when you're watching, but it feels really solid and responsive to play. And so maybe that's a good segue into the combat. It's kind of neat. It's sort of streamlined, but you get some really interesting things that you can spec into or decisions. So you get four different weapon types in this game. So there's swords, axes, daggers, and bows. And when you're holding those weapons, they have their own unique moves. And they start out with just like a couple basic things. And then as you go and you level up, you can put a point into skill trees, and each of the weapon types has their own tree. And everything you put into it, sometimes they give you like just base upgrades, but normally there are like different moves that you can use. So now it's like, now you can attack in the air, like a little bit of a longer air combo, or now you've got like a really strong move you can use to like plunge to the ground, or now it's like a heavy attack gets added on. So I find that was actually really exciting, because like leveling up, it's like, oh, I got something new, versus just like, oh, I'm 2% stronger. And like,
What I was talking about last time with Dodgeball Academia, just the same problem with like just those incremental percentages. So that's really good to hear. This game is the opposite.
Exactly. It's really like tangible, which I appreciate. And it also like inspires you to kind of look ahead and like build a path. So like, I'm using the sword as my primary weapon, because when you get it, it starts off with just a like block, but then you can upgrade it into like, now it can parry, and now, and then you can upgrade a little bit further, and off a parry you can do like a really big like swing attack that does extra damage when they're staggered. So like, it's not a surprise, but I wanted to build into that. I thought it was really cool.
Oh, you're parrying. What a surprise.
Ooh, what a surprise. Yes. But I've started using the bow a little bit recently, because I'm starting to get kind of like extra points that I can.
And it's possible to have enough to spec into like multiple things.
Absolutely. I think the game is very generous. I think if anything, I'm going to run into the problem where I have too many points to spend, and I'm going to start like arbitrarily throwing things in the axe tree where I normally wouldn't use them.
Right. Yeah.
But it's fine, because it encourages like, well, maybe I will try the axe out, where normally in a game you wouldn't, because you don't like, it's going to be so underpowered that you just don't get the option. But with this game, I really feel like you could use a combination of everything.
Right. It's almost like a matter of time until you have most things kind of unlocked, regardless of how you're playing. Yeah,
exactly. And then there's also a fifth skill tree that's more of like just passive upgrades for your character. So like get extra health, like your stamina regens faster, like those kind of just passive things. So every now and again, it's nice to throw a point in there, because like,
That stuff's important too. Yeah, it's just a bit less exciting.
Exactly. So I just every now and again throw a point in there, and then go back to the more exciting trees. But I really like it. Like, I feel like it's a nice balance of, I do have some choices, I'm planning it out, I'm creating a build, but it's also so easy to just level up and like, oh, I put my point, I want that ability to use, versus like, oh, well, I have to put 30 points in adaption so that my roll is this good. And also, like, the soft cap on strength is 40. And, like, I know some people really love that kind of, like, leveling system. And I think it has a time and place. But I think this game works well with being a bit more streamlined.
Yeah, I think in general, the more streamlined you can make it, the better. I mean, unless you're playing, I would imagine something like Divinity, you know, that's got really high end nuts and bolts to it, and you know, all the stat trees and all that stuff. Like, yeah, sure, go ahead. But in a game like this, where you're more wanting to get into the action, I think that's probably better to have something a bit simpler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it fits this game nicely. So yeah, that's the combat. The bosses are great. I find the overworld is not too challenging. Like, it's definitely got a difficulty. It's not a super easy game, but I find that it's the bosses that kick your ass a bit. So I
Yeah.
appreciate that. They're fantastic design. They're like, if you thought the regular enemies were terrifying, like the bosses are just some other kind of like abomination. They're amazing. And there's one other thing I want to say about this game that I really appreciate is that the story has been pretty light so far. It's kind of more of a mystery. Like, I'm trying to kind of investigate and figure out what's going on. So I don't have tons of concrete details yet. But what is really interesting is that this game has like a proper town where you're constantly returning to it and like it, but it's not just like a hub area. Like, there's actual guards at the town defending it, and there's people that live in it. There's like a tavern and like just villagers, and there's like an abbey for where the sick people are going. And it seems like such a mundane thing, but these kind of games never have that. There's never like a proper thriving society.
No, I was going to say, like, the only, I can't even think of an example, but I feel like that would just be some type of hub world or something where you would have like the tavern where you could go and maybe upgrade your stuff and then go back out.
And then there's like five NPCs that show up there that you collect throughout the game. But
Yeah,
this
yeah.
is,
One of
no,
them's got like
like,
an item box and stuff
yeah,
like that.
exactly. But this is a proper town that you're from and you go back to and like check in on the villagers, and they give you side quests, and like they know who you are because you grew up there. So it seems like such a mundane detail, but it actually really changes the context of the storytelling in this genre that I've never seen before. And so that small detail has really interested me, and now it's really exciting to go back and like check in on my town, and I really feel like an underdog, but in a very different way than like normally. Like, the world's gone to shit and you're like the last hero, or like you're the only, it's just you in this like isolated, desolate place. It's like, no, like I'm gonna go make sure my sister's okay at home. Like, it's
Interesting,
really
yeah.
interesting.
That's cool. I wonder what made them think to do that because, yeah, you're right. Like, these games never have stuff like that, yeah.
And I mean, it ties into the story. Like, there's a bit of a mystery like surrounding the town, so it's definitely like written in more ways than just like, oh, we didn't know where to put the shops. Like, it's pretty integral. But yeah, it's really neat. The exploration in the game is fantastic. So maybe the last point I want to end on is that it's very rewarding. There's tons of hidden little side paths that you get interesting loot or like equipment. And the story kind of nudges you in a couple directions, but there's so many ways to go when you first start. It's almost a little overwhelming. That like I wanted to go to one area and ended up like getting lost for like 2 hours, just like somewhere I totally wasn't supposed to be. But it's fantastic. I think there's a few little nitpicks. I would say the save system is something maybe I just need to get used to, but it always surprises me when I die because it doesn't do like the Souls thing where like you lose your XP or currency, but like the game state did progress. You just go back to your last save. So there's been a couple times where I've like gone, explored, like got some items, and then died. And it's like, well, fuck, I gotta go open that chest again.
I feel like we've had this conversation, what, two or three episodes ago? I can't, with Get Bloodstained, actually,
Yeah,
right? Like, you had
Bloodstained is the
the
same.
same thing. Yeah, and it's funny because, like, I probably mentioned the same thing before, but playing Symphony of the Night still, as people know, it's been like 2 months now, but I'm not done. It's like the same experience. So yeah, it's definitely different, that's for sure. Depends which side of the fence you fall on with that argument, I guess, which you prefer.
But I mean, yeah, it's only happened a couple times, and I think it sometimes leads to interesting situations because, like, oh, do I use the health potion? Do I not use the health potion? Like, I'm more concerned about dying than I normally would be. So I don't know if there's pros and cons to that.
Yeah, I think it
But
just depends on what school you come from, of like
exactly.
what I'm sure hardcore Castlevania fans will go for that side. Souls people will probably prefer the Souls option. Like, I think they both have their merits, yeah.
Exactly. But yeah, overall, I think it's a fantastic game. I mean, I've been playing a lot of these types of kind of like inspired spin-off sort of titles, and especially from the indie developers, there's a dime a dozen. But this one is one of the ones I just kind of picked up, like it just happened to be like available in my library to play, and I didn't really come with any expectations or knowing too much about it. And I have been really pleasantly surprised. Like it was even like to the point yesterday I was gonna like play some Returnal. I was like, oh, should I just play Vigil? And that is a very, very strong
sign. Wow, that's high praise because we all know you've been really into Returnal, so that's
exactly.
Good. Nice. All right, well, I guess that will end us for what we've been playing these last couple of weeks. But we'll be right back after the break to talk about the news. So please stick around. We'll see you in just a sec. Everybody, welcome back to the second part of today's show, where we have a lot of news to discuss, Kate. So let's jump right into it. The first and foremost story we have to talk about here is that PlayStation finally has announced the purchase of Bluepoint, which if anyone has listened to the show a couple months ago will know this is basically already a known quantity after that PlayStation official account tweet that showed that they had bought Bluepoint in the infographic. So maybe not a huge surprise, but big news nonetheless. I mean, they've had a big history with PlayStation the last few years, remaking Demon's Souls, you know, Shadow of the Colossus, obviously two very high profile remakes. They've done other ones on PS3 and PS4 as well. So just a big announcement, I guess, for a studio that's already been pretty associated with PlayStation the last little bit. So what are your takeaways?
Yeah, I think this is awesome. I think absolutely it's not really a surprise. The biggest takeaway for me is that they announced that the next thing they're going to be releasing is going to be their own game, like a unique new IP, which is exciting because Bluepoint is obviously known for their remakes and remasters, and they are the absolute kings of that. They've done such a good job.
Oh, unparalleled.
But it's going to be interesting to see what they're gonna create of their own accord. So, and having Sony backing that is probably gonna be a really big asset for them. So I'm excited to see what they come up with, and I have my selfish fingers crossed that it's gonna play on a lot of what they learned from making Demon's Souls.
Yeah, we'll see. It'll be interesting. I mean I've been thinking a lot about this, and I've listened to a couple other podcasts kind of talking about this as well. And it's interesting that I've heard some people pointing out that the wording is like they're working on original content, but they don't say an original IP, which is usually the wording. So I think there's some speculation of like, oh, what if they're doing a new entry in, you know, Metal Gear or something like that? Because that would still be new content, technically not, you know, a new IP, but I mean, whatever, we'll have to wait and see, but that's just speculation, right? I think Bluepoint's definitely deserved the chance to work on whatever they want to work on. If that's a new IP and they have something they've been, you know, prototyping in the background or, you know, designing kind of in the background of all these remakes, then I think they've earned the chance to put their best project they want to make forward. But at the same time, I think it's an interesting point because, I mean, as PlayStation fans, I think it's exciting to have them on board, whether it's for, you know, a new IP or not. But I think there's a universe where this is a bit of a sad news for the gaming industry, though, just in the sense that there's a lot of games that would be really, really awesome to see remade that aren't necessarily PlayStation games. So, I mean, it takes them out of the running to do those type of things. But all in all, I still think it's a net gain for PlayStation specifically. I mean, there's so many games that could be brought back, right, eventually if they do another remake. Or the original content, obviously, too. But yeah, you never know.
That's fair. And there's still some other big big players in the remake games. Like, I think it's like Toys for Bob who did the Spyro collection. And like, you know, there's some other ones out there for the non-PlayStation exclusives. So maybe this will just kind of help share the pot a little bit.
True. Yeah, anyway, it's exciting to see. I mean, I don't know when we'll actually hear what they're working on, but I know it's going to be when that Bluepoint logo shows up at a PlayStation State of Play or something, you know, everyone's going to be tuned right in.
Yeah, absolutely. They've got the credentials like above and beyond what they need for people to get excited. So whatever it's going to be a big deal for sure.
100%. If you had to guess right now, or if you had to make a prediction of like what type of game they're making, we'll just throw it out there. What do you think? I can go first if you want a second to think.
Okay, sure. You tell me.
I think it's going to be some kind of open world kind of adventure thing. I mean, I think that they did the Shadow of Colossus, so obviously that's a pretty big world to kind of look around. You know, they could throw in some combat from Souls, who knows, but something like that. Maybe maybe I'll go with that.
Yeah, that's somewhere where my mind immediately went is some kind of action RPG. I think it'd be cool to add in the kind of Shadows, like a or Shadows of Colossus. Yeah, like kind of like if you mix that with Souls, that could be so cool.
Oh my
You'd be
God.
Like climbing at the enemy, but then it would have like really tight responsive combat, and I kind of like
Oh, that sounds amazing.
That'd be okay, Blue Point, please. Yeah.
All right, well, let's move along to our second news story for the day, which, of course, is PlayStation Plus for November 2021. We have our announced games coming up on the service for next month, so let's get into it. I said November, didn't I? I meant October 2021. Don't get ahead of myself here. So we have on PlayStation 5, we have Hell Let Loose, a game I just heard about when this announcement came out. We have Mortal Kombat X, and for Michael, the streamer, I shout out at the top of the show, our good friend Mike, we have PGA 2K21, which is 100% probably going to show up on his stream. So if you're a golf fan, you know we probably won't be talking too much about that on this show. So please check out Mr. Del Monster on Twitch. But yeah, Kate, what do you think? I mean, this probably is not striking me as a hugely successful month for us specifically with our tastes. But I mean, Mortal Kombat X might be kind of cool to have a night.
Yeah, that's my sentiment. I think I could have a Mortal Kombat night and have a good time with some friends. Other than that, if I'm golfing, like it's going to be Mario Golf. I don't think the PGA is, I don't think I want to be Tiger Woods when I could be Bowser. Like that's just a non-contest for me.
Well, true. And if our tennis experience was any indication with the tennis a couple, it'd be a rough time.
That's right. I really don't want to watch two NPCs have a golf match before I realize that I'm not playing. So I'm out there. The shooting game actually looks pretty cool. Hell Let Loose or whatever it's called. It looks like Battlefield a lot to me. But then finding out it's like 100 player matches, like it does seem pretty cool. And it just came out, I think, in July. So it's a probably actually a really cool game to come to PS Plus if you're into that kind of genre, because I imagine it's a pricey title otherwise. And it's like a new, looks to be quite polished. But again, I think I'm going to play Gears of War or Returnal if I want to be shooting something. So I think maybe...
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe we'll do some Mortal Kombat.
I think that's how I feel about it too. Yeah, it's you know, it's just one of those things, like you don't have time to play everything, right? And that's my opinion on that. Team 17, I just looked it up. Apparently they were in on Worms for quite a number of years. So that's an interesting shift over to
Let my Hell God, Loose. No, stay away from that. That Worms game I had to play. Oh my God.
You got it out
I'd
for
rather
Worms,
watch NPCs you, like... play tennis.
Oh man. Well, for what it's worth, I think these guys left Worms before that game came out. But you know. Anyway, that's PS Plus, so we will let you know which of those we play on our next show. So look forward to talking about that. So our next story, though, Kate, is a very interesting one, and this is about our favorite God of War, specifically Kratos himself. That's right. Christopher Judge came out with an interesting statement a couple days ago, saying that the God of War Ragnarok was actually delayed in large part because of his health. And he had to basically ask the game to be, you know, delayed. He wasn't able to act. He apparently needed some pretty significant surgeries and whatnot, and received nothing but support from Sony Santa Monica. And you know, the game getting pushed back is without any kind of consequence or, you know, negative impact for him. And so, I mean, we talk a lot about crunch and some of the bad stuff in the industry sometimes. So I think it's just important to recognize this and show, like, you know, sometimes at least there's some positive stories as well, that of people getting treated right. So hopefully he's doing okay, and hopefully God of War 20 or Ragnarok is no worse for wear.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, this was a really nice story, and I think it's nice to be able to focus on something like this, because like you said, there's so much negativity and so many really dark parts of the industry. So it's nice to see someone really get treated very respectfully, and just have him, you know, be given the respect. And the other thing too is he's not just voice acting, he's doing all the mocap for Kratos as well. So he really is this character, like he is full on acting, and he is Kratos as much as an actor in a movie would be. So that's really fantastic. I think the game would have really suffered without him, and having to change that partway through, it's just not possible. So I think that's fantastic. And I like too that they didn't even bring it up themselves, right? It was Christopher who tweeted this himself, because he was able to and he decided to tweet about it. But it's not like it was Sony, you know, like putting this on him. They took the responsibility. It's like, sorry guys, we're delaying it, it's not ready. So I think this is awesome. It's a really nice story, and I think the game will probably be better for it.
Oh, totally. Yeah. And I think that just speaks to the quality of the product they're trying to put out. Because if they were on a more strict timeline, you know, or getting pressure from Sony or anyone, you know, shareholders, God knows who that is, would be at the end of the day. But, you know, this game has to come out. So their option would be, okay, well, we obviously can't replace Christopher's voice. So we're going to have to mocap someone else and put his voice over top. But I think that would, like you said, the whole picture would suffer because there's something about, I would imagine, I'm not an actor, but acting the whole character versus just the voice and then someone else doing that, the movement would be, you know, a lot different than the quality and the standard they put out in that first game and just the unbelievable performance that he gave as that character. So yeah, it's good news all around, and wishing them the best. And God, I can't wait to play Ragnarok. Every time that game comes up on the show, I have to say it, but man, it looks so good.
So good.
So good. And so for our last news story, a game that may or may not be so good. There is a quick rumor we wanted to run by everyone that the Destruction All-Stars dev team may be at the helm for a new Twisted Metal game, which is in development. This is just some rumors that came out to coincide along with the Twisted Metal TV show that apparently is coming out in 2023. So, interesting choice because I don't think Destruction All-Stars was overly successful as a franchise for PlayStation. I mean, it kind of just showed up on PS Plus, and I mean, I don't think people are really playing it too much anymore. So unfortunately, I mean, that was the fate of that. But maybe they could rebound with Twisted Metal. Who knows? But I mean, I don't, is this something you care about? Are you a Twisted Metal fan? What's going on?
I mean, I remember distinctly a few times we rented Twisted Metal from like Blockbuster or whatever. And my one distinct, very strong memory of Twisted Metal is like in whatever level it had like a big ravine, and we were both like driving a bus, and we would get like stuck in the ravine because the bus was too long, you couldn't like turn around, and so you'd just be stuck like in this like stupid long bus.
It's like they didn't test for that vehicle being in that
No.
area or something. Yeah.
Yeah, it really didn't fit. So I have a couple like fun memories of like playing as a kid. I don't remember it that well, and I don't even know if it's a game like that I would care about. I think for like nostalgia's sake, I would definitely like want to try it out and like play for like a weekend, and I think it's like a great, probably great game to like have a couple drinks and like play with some friends, and like, yeah, one guy's the ice cream truck, like one guy's you gotta be the bus. I
Yeah.
think that's so
Oh,
funny.
my favorite one was always the guy who just is like the dude with the two wheels on his arms. You've seen that guy? Like he
And
doesn't
he
even
just
have a
like
car.
runs.
Yeah. No, I think the wheels just spin. Like I think he just ha his body just hangs.
That's so funny. Yeah, I like it. I think it's like I like they're bringing it back. It's like a weird arcadey game. You don't really like, I guess you do like those like couch like arcade games have like come back, and couch co-op is a thing again. So I think it'll probably be good. But it would be like a great PS Plus game because I don't want to buy it. I just want to play it for a weekend and like have a couple laughs, and then I think I'll probably be good.
Yeah, I think I'm with you too. And honestly, like this is the kind of game, maybe this is just me being very cynical, but I would be somewhat worried about this game's quality. Not just because of the developer. I mean, the devs for Destruction All-Stars, I can't remember the name right now, but they've done other racing games in the past which have done better than that. So it's not just that fact, but also the fact that they're putting the timeline of this TV show that's coming out 2023. You know, I would hate to see us return to that era of like, oh, we have to get this out now because it's got to tie into these marketing deals and, you know, not be kind of up to that quality. But I mean, that would also go against PlayStation Studios because they usually have pretty high standards. So we'll have to wait and see, but I wouldn't say I'm, you know, getting myself fired up for this.
Not
Just kind of
revving up for just a
not revving
minute.
up quite yet. Not right, not quite yet, but yeah. And anyway, Kate, I think that's the news section for this week. So we will again take a short break and be back right afterwards to talk about some of our favorite duos in gaming, inspired by Marcus Fenix and Dom, what's his last name?
I
Dom
think
Santiago?
I want to say he's just Dom, like he's like a one name guy. He definitely has a last
Yeah.
name, but it feels weird to just like,
I have
I don't
Dom
know.
Toretto in my head, but that's the Fast and Furious
Toretto.
guy, so it's
Oh.
definitely not that. Anyway, we'll be back in just a second to talk about video game duos, so please join us in a second. All right, everybody, welcome back to the third and final part of the show. or yes, I have confirmed it is Dom Santiago. I was right. I wasn't too sure of myself. I was maybe guesses, and then you're like, well, that might have been like 55% correct.
Okay.
And so I'm pretty pleased with how that turned out.
Should be more confident. Yeah.
I should. But Dom and Marcus are a great way to start off our discussion here, Kate. We're talking about our favorite duos in video games, or just gaming duos in general. And I mean, this is a really big project to talk about, or big topic. Like, you know, we could start at the very top, Mario and Luigi, Donkey Kong and Diddy Kong. You know, like there's so many classic partnerships. But I would like to think that there's some pretty unique ones to throw out as well. But I mean, there's so many ways they can go, right? Like, are they rivals? Are they friends? Are they teammates? Like, there's just so many different aspects. Like, where do you think we should start?
Well, let's start maybe with. We can start with Dom and Marcus, because we've just been talking about them. And they're a good quintessential, like, duo. Like, they are, but they're a duo in the way that they're, like, two bros who are, like, super bros. And they're kind of, like, the same character, basically. So they, like, go together perfectly because they're the same character, in essence.
I'll tell you what the difference between those guys. Mm-hmm. They're the same character, except Dom has a wife and Marcus has a dad. And then their personality is that they talk about that one person.
Right. You're allowed one family member. Oh my God. It'd be so funny if it was like they were like the same dialogue. And so it had to be like generic, like it could fit like a wife or a dad. Like there's that, I can't remember what show it is, but there's like one of those like sitcoms. I don't know if it's The Office or like Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I think it is Brooklyn Nine-Nine. And one of them, like, one guy talks about someone at home and the other characters don't know if it's like his girlfriend or his dog that he's talking about. He's like, yeah, we went to the park this weekend. It was great. Like, you know, she had a great time like walking up and down the grass. And then like, oh, we had a really big meal afterwards. And like, you can't tell. And so that's exactly like Dom and Phoenix talking about like their wife and or father.
I'm not exactly sure how we got here, but yeah, you're right. Yeah. And that's what makes them a great duo. You know, you can interchange them like that. And that just proves they always have each other's back, right? And
yes.
And I think that really leads us into a lot of, you know, PlayStation themselves have a lot of very classic duos, like Ratchet and Clank, obviously. Big one just came out earlier this year. They always have each other's backs. Clank is actually always on Ratchet's back. So that's even better. And I mean, they're an iconic duo. You could also name, like, Joel and Ellie, you know, Kratos and Atreus now. So, I mean, PlayStation themselves they seem to be really good at pairing up, you know, Nate and Sully. They have all kinds of these power pairs, of course, which are so iconic now, especially like in today's gaming landscape.
Yeah, I think it's a really strong way to tell a story, and I think we see it both when I was writing down, I just wrote down a couple like brainstorming duos, and Kratos and Boy and Joel and Ellie were the first two that I wrote down. And it's so smart because it is a fantastic way to tell a story, right? Like, there doesn't have to be any awkward internal dialogue. They can have a conversation the entire time and get across all the information that the player needs to know, but it's not just exposition, it's these two characters having a conversation and learning about the world together. And then also like the foils for character development. Like, it's just such a solid framework to build a game off of. And then you add in all the things like emotional attachment and like what these two characters mean to each other. And I think like, it's just such a perfect storytelling medium. And like, another one I thought of is Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons. Or sorry, not Brothers.
Oh,
that one's good
great
too.
Shot.
Also
yeah.
That one, but not that one. Lucas and Amicia is what I was going to say from Plague Tale. They've similar kind of dynamic where it's like, okay, these two characters and what do they have to learn from each other kind of thing.
Yeah, and I think that's an important aspect too, like the dialogue and being able to not have that exposition. It makes me think of Days Gone and how that game, largely you're riding around by yourself. And so I was talking about how your character is always talking to himself on the motorcycle. And some of it's funny, but some of it's also like, why are you saying this out loud? Whereas, yeah, these duos kind of go really well together that way. But one thing I like about all the duos we kind of name there too, like, is that they're also functional in terms of the game mechanics too, like, you know, whether it's Ellie getting to float on the, you know, those cardboard or the wooden pallets across the water, or Atreus shooting some arrows or something to help Kratos out. Like, they're more than just a tag along at this point for dialogue's sake. They actually are there for justification as to why you can accomplish some of your tasks as well. And I think that's another mark, like Clank as well, like as half of Ratchet's functionality is being able to use the propellers and the rockets that he has. So, I mean, it's just a little bit more characterization than something else. I wanted to throw out another one too, considering we brought up Ellie, but I really wanted to shout out, I can't remember, did you play The Last of Us DLC?
I have not yet. I intend to, but I have not currently.
Okay, right. Well, I'll just minor spoilers then for you. You'll obviously figure this out right at the start, but a lot of that game shows the relationship between Ellie and Riley, who's a character that was part of her past. And that's another great duo. And I love the way they were able to develop Ellie's character again through this dialogue, but just hearing her speak a lot of, to someone who's not Joel is very interesting. And they were a great duo as well. Another one I'd like to change topics and show and throw out is Crash and Spyro, which is a great duo for different reasons. These guys are, of course, like classic PlayStation characters. You know, they're not a duo in the sense that they are in the same game or improve each other for some reason, but it's just like one of those, they're more like visual icons of a brand, you know, and I guess not these days, but back then it'd be like seeing, you know, Mario and Link for Nintendo or something. So I think that just seeing those characters can evoke some kind of emotion, even if it's just nostalgic or like what they represent as like an image.
Right. Okay. So like kind of like mascots. It's like having like the Olympics, you got like three mascots and it's like here are these three like ambassadors almost.
Ambassadors. That's a good way to put it, right? Like now you'd probably have like Nathan Drake or Aloy and Kratos, like two of the three of those guys, right? But or like Ellie, you know, you pick your favorites, but I think there's an older era of those characters that's kind of those two for some reason are just so tied together, right? Crash and Spyro, like they're not really that related, but for some reason they're just associated.
Yeah, I think they just have like they were at their same kind of time and they've had a similar history with like getting the remasters at like approximately the same time, and yeah, they're always associated, those two. But that's interesting. I didn't think so much of like outside of the game. But yeah, I think to me what I focus on and just kind of reflecting on my list is really like characters that bring like a foil for each other and augment the story and each other. And then also like, yeah, with the gameplay consideration. And I think Brothers: A Tale of Two Sons, that I accidentally mentioned earlier, but will actually mention now, is amazing at that and the way that you control both of them at the same time. Because typically when you have one of these duos, you are like one that's like a main character and then one that's more of like an augment or a sidekick. And they're both maybe equally important in terms of story. But in God of War, you play primarily as Kratos with Atreus there to help you out.
Well, he gets like one button.
Exactly.
You basically press square, right? Or whatever button it is.
Exactly. Or maybe you'll play certain sections as the other character, but there's usually one defining character where you as the player take control of. And so Brothers is really cool because it's such a unique game in the way that you're actually controlling both at the same time, and your arsenal is like totally split between two different characters. And it has a really that gameplay mechanic plays throughout the entire game and is, you know, a really big a big emotional climactic event at the end. So I think that definitively might be one of the best duos, just because it hits every single box, I think. But it's not always necessarily the one that would come to mind first, because there's so many classic characters.
Yeah, I mean, Brothers, I love Brothers. It's definitely one of my favorite games I've ever played. It's interesting you bring that up, because to me, I think of that game, like the brothers are everything the duo needs, except for I don't know if either of them are that interesting. So it's interesting because, like, the dichotomy, because the brothers are just like, you know, these unfortunate guys, and the way that the story kind of unfolds and everything is they're an amazing duo and check a lot of the boxes, but they don't have that like iconicness like we were talking about. So it's interesting to point them out, but I agree, they're like a top tier pick.
Yeah, I think maybe the difference with them is they don't really feel like their own distinct character. They feel like one unit, and maybe part of that is influenced by the control scheme and how you control them as one character, kind of. But you're right that they don't really like stand out on their own quite as much as some of the other ones. Like Brock and Sindri, for example, is another great duo, and like
they're so
like iconic, like you know exactly who each one of them is and you can picture them in situations without the other one, but they enhance each other so much. And that's maybe not quite so much with the brothers, like one wouldn't really be anywhere without the other.
True, but it's a different kind of game, though. I mean, Brothers isn't so dialogue heavy and everything. Like God of War is, I mean, they're so hard to compare, right?
Course,
but yeah, Brock and Sindri, standout side character duo. And I think that's another type of duo you can really look into is like, yeah, Brock and Sindri, obviously not playable characters, but they're an iconic duo from God of War. They're maybe the two most iconic characters aside from like, you know, the main cast. That's interesting you bring them up. Another side combination that I wanted to shout out was Edgeworth and Gumshoe in the original Phoenix Wright trilogy, because
awesome.
I mean, Phoenix and Maya would have been such an obvious kind of pair to pick out, and of course you could bring that up, but I mean Phoenix or Edgeworth and Gumshoe to me are hilarious, like, and you say how they foil each other, and you know Gumshoe is such an idiot and just always making mistakes, but he's so endearing, whereas Edgeworth is, you know, stern and I mean, he obviously has a big heart, doesn't seem to know him, but obviously they're very different on the outside, their demeanors. So just seeing those two interact and constantly get on each other's nerves but have to put up with it is just a dream to read through as you go through the trilogy.
They're awesome. I think that duo beats Maya and Phoenix. As great as they are, I think you've hit the nail on the head for Phoenix Wright. I just thought of one that I think is amazing. I think you're really going to like. Danganronpa 1, but the duo is not you and like whatever helper character you get. So it's not like you and Kyoko, whatever, who cares. It's Mondo and Taka, I think was his name. The guy who follows the rules really well. And Mondo biker guy, and they hated each other at first, but they're both really stubborn. So then they had like a contest to see who could stay in the sauna for longer. And then they became like the best of friends ever. Like they went from like being rivals, like one biker guy who doesn't follow the rules and Taka who's like too obsessed with the rules. And then they like grew such a respect for each other that the whole character of them going forward was like how much they loved each other. Because they went in the sauna for like 7 hours or something.
I completely forgot about that subplot, but yeah, that was hilarious. And I that's right, you know what, that might be the best. I was thinking about from Danganronpa, because of course that came to my mind thinking about this. I was thinking Monokuma and Monomi, but I don't think you know Monomi yet, do you? Or no, you do.
I beat them all. Yeah.
Oh, you have. Of course, you have. Yeah, Monokuma and Monomi, I think, are hilarious too, because Monomi is just so pathetic and like freaks out about everything, and Monokuma is so abusive. It's just some of the things, like their interactions and the dialogue. She kind of yells back at him, and she's like, "No, don't do that." It's just so funny to me.
Yeah. So that's those a good two one. As well. Thinking about best duos, I didn't necessarily think of like an abusive relationship, but you're right, because they're both such weird characters in Danganronpa, and like, you know, he's forcing you to murder people. You don't really feel bad for him. So,
yeah. Another interesting circumstance too, and this one, I mean, this is a deep cut, so stick with me. But this one is like, what if the duo is like your conscience, kind of? I'm thinking about something like Disco Elysium, where you're talking to yourself and your thoughts. Like, is that a duo in some kind of way, like you and your thoughts? Or there's another game, I don't know if you remember The Darkness, which was kind of a 360 era game where you play as this mobster named Jackie Estacado, but you get infected by the darkness, which is like this evil being which kind of lives inside your head and gives you these, you know, evil powers, and you can kind of, it's a really cool game, actually. I like it quite a bit. That would be a good Blue Point remake if it was a PlayStation game. But I think that's kind of cool, because you have this being talking to you while you're playing, and like there's no other character around you, it's just in your thoughts. So I think that's another kind of twist, even though it's only one kind of character.
Yeah, I think that definitely counts. I think that's a really, like, it's not the most obvious example, but it is really interesting. And it functions in the same kind of way, right? Because it brings up different options for your character. It brings up ways to reflect and to perceive them based off of how they interact. So I think that's awesome. Disco Elysium is rife with them. Like, Kim is such a good one as well. Like, when he becomes your cop buddy relatively early on, and he focuses like partially his insight into the world and like a way to learn, but he's also just like such a good partner as well. And there's some humor that gets added with him. But I really like, the conscience. It kind of, it's you, but it plays its own role as though it's kind of got a bit of a separate identity than you as the player.
Oh, totally.
Character.
Yeah. Totally. I think it's interesting to explore. Like, you could even argue that's more than a duo. Like, every different aspect of the conscience is kind of have its own narrator, its own personality. So it might even be more than that, but it's interesting to think about.
Mm-hmm.
Question for you now. I've got to ask you this, and I need your instant reaction, and then you're going to have to see why. Which of these is a better duo?
Okay.
John Marston and his horse.
Okay.
Or Jin Sakai and his horse.
Jin Sakai and his horse. I think John Marston and his horse would be stronger, except that you do not have the same horse for the entire game. Whereas Jin Sakai keeps his horse, and so that puts him over the edge. But John Marston has the best horse lines in any game. Like, if someone were to ever love me, like, a fraction of how much John Marston loves his horse, like, you'd be the happiest person in the world.
Oh, my God.
He's like, oh, come on, girl. It's going to be okay.
Oh, my God. He's so reassuring.
And then he feeds you oatcakes, like, out of his hands. So nice. He brushes
your definitely hair. Clipping out that John Marston impression and saving that somehow.
Oh, no.
All right, I got a few rapid fire ones to go through. These are the humorous ones that I came up with as well. So stick with me. Let's see which of these you like the best. We have Shovel Knight and his shovel. Doom Guy and guns.
Doom Guy and guns, okay.
Scott Shelby and rain.
That's my favorite one.
Peppy and barrel rolls.
Peppy, oh, yep.
Garmin and house fires.
And house fires. Kermit, yeah.
And finally, Nathan Drake and Abercrombie shirts.
Oh, okay. I thought you were saying a neck brace, but yeah, he's got both.
Well, that's Nathan Drake. That's a different
that's
character.
That's Nathan Drake, right. That's his alter ego. You could say that is an alter ego a duo? Because you could have Nathan and Nathan.
Well, I mean, if that ever happens, then, you know, it'll be like some weird Metroid Prime corruption thing where there's like Dark Samus. It'll be like Nathan Drake and Nathan Drake.
Nathan Drake.
Yeah, some weird duo. It's interesting. You know, the one thing we didn't bring up was any kind of romantic duo. Like, is there any good game love stories? I was thinking about this, and the only one I could even think of that's like worth mentioning would be one of my favorites, Final Fantasy X, is Tidus and Yuna, and they kind of have this this blossoming relationship as you go through the game. But I feel like that's, at least in the games that I've played, like, not really something that I have a lot of experience with. Maybe the Telltale stuff or something, but
yeah, I think they just tend to not really play that type of game very much. I would say one that comes to mind, and it's a game I haven't played yet, but it interests me, is Haven. You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
That game looks like...
That's a couple, right? You play as...
As a couple, and I think you play as them together, and there's, like, some action, and there's some, like, you know, you go around, and there's a lot of, like, traversal, but I think they also have, like, scenes where they're just at their house or, like, recouping from the day, and they're talking to each other and just kind of, like, snuggling up and doing, like, really nice, like, intimate activities. And it's not really like, it's not a dating sim, because you are just an established couple, like, that's the relationship between the two, but from what I've heard, and it's kind of interesting, is that they are just like a really convincing and nice couple, and there's like not the drama of like will they won't they, it's just that's the character. So that interests me and is just something different, and apparently they pull it off really well, so they'd probably...
I remember
be a
that
great
game
duo.
Looking pretty cool.
Yeah,
I would think so.
It's really interesting. I think I've got maybe one more, unless you've got anything to close off.
No, go ahead. My list is kind of exhausted, yeah.
This last one I came up with, and I think it's neat. This one's just is for an interesting gameplay consideration. But there's a character in Heroes of the Storm called Cho'Gall. I think I've told you about him before.
I mean, that could be from a lot of games.
Well, it'll be familiar in a moment, but yeah, Cho'Gall is actually, so you play 5v5 is
oh,
the game.
I know exactly what this
and
is. Yes,
exactly.
Yes.
And so two players have to play Cho'Gall together. You cannot play him alone. You can't have one on the team. It's like, he's this big, like, two-headed monster. And so it has to be duo up. You got to queue up one person Cho, one person Gall, and you play them together. So one person is in charge of like the movement, and then one person has more like abilities that they fire off of him, and as you play, like, you kind of have to like be coordinating. So like one of their moves is like one of them will throw out this like bomb, the other person has to like detonate it at the right time. So that's kind of a cool duo. And I mean, I guess they're kind of like one person, like they share a body and they're just two different heads, but
that's such
kind
a
of
fascinating
a cool duo, because
me.
Like, yeah, like it's such a neat gameplay thing where you actually like have to be coordinating with the person more so than just like any other member on your team. So I think that's something that doesn't happen very often, because it's really hard to implement into a game, but is really fun as a duo character.
I really like that answer. I think that's a very, very fascinating character design. Is that, just quickly, like, is that character good? Or, like, you know, I feel like it would just be too much of a hassle.
He can be. I think it's one of those things where, like, he's, I don't think he's, like, great in higher tiers of play, but in, like, mid to low, he can be pretty strong because, like, he's just such a beefy guy. He's so hard to kill because he's got, like, the combat stats of two people. So I don't think, you don't see him very often, so it's probably not a good sign, but he's super fun to hop up every now and again. Be like, hey, you want to be like Cho'Gall and we'll just like do some like dumb stuff.
Yeah, you see that guy on the queue and it's like you're either about to get obliterated by some pros or they're going to be absolutely no idea what's going on.
I think he's the kind of character you have to build your entire team around Cho'Gall to like make him good. Otherwise, you just have like one less body on the map and that kind of sucks. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I think my favorite detail and what really sells Cho'Gall though is it shows like your username above your character. But when you're Cho'Gall, it actually like combines your names into one name. And some of the combinations you get are like, oh boy, some of the combinations you get are great. Like normally it's just like whatever your names are. So it's like kind of like some nonsensical mess. Just it takes like the first four letters of one and like the last four letters of the other person, just slaps them together, you get something dumb. But there was a period of time, and it's been a while, so please, if anyone's heard of this person, let us know. Make sure, let us know they're doing okay. But there was a period of time, it was maybe like 2 months, where we would play in the evenings and we kept consistently coming up against this Cho'Gall. And the two people had like clearly made these accounts for playing Cho'Gall, because their names together made like, oh, I can't even remember what it was. It was like ass rape or something is what their names made.
Oh my God, man.
And like, it was horrible, but it was so funny because it was like, how are your accounts that high level and like you just play Cho'Gall together? Like the commitment they had to this character was so funny. And we played consistently. Like we'd see a Cho'Gall, we'd be like, oh my God, is it them? Is it them? And it just like, it always was them. We'd be cracking up every time we found them. And it must have been like 4 or 5 months now. We haven't seen these people. So please, if anybody has any information. Oh, no, it wasn't Astrid. It was Grape Assault. That's what it was. Because you can't.
That's a lot better. That's so a lot much better. Better.
Well, I think it was like, you know, you can't say certain things, right? Yeah. You get right, like. Right. So that was their way of getting around it. It was Grape Assault. That was their name. And it translated into like, ass or something. It was horrible.
Never question the ingenuity of the internet, folks.
Exactly. But anyway, I want to file an official missing persons report. Please let us know if they're out there, if they're doing okay. We miss you.
Well, speaking of letting us know, this is usually the part of the show where we transition to listener mail and get you to write in a question for us to talk about. And we would advertise the email address, which is circlesandsquarespod@gmail.com, if you wish to do so. You could write in, let us know some of your favorite gaming duos. You could let in and let us know if you found Grape. Please just any comments or questions you got, send them in. We love reading the messages you guys send in. It's great fun, and we'll return to listener mail next week. But this time, Kate, we're doing something a little bit different. Just because we were talking about video game duos, we thought instead of answering one of our listener mail questions, we would put a little poll out on Twitter and see what our community kind of thought of iconic PlayStation duos. Of course, the polls can only be so big on Twitter, you know? So we had to kind of limit it. But I put out a poll earlier today which said, which of these is the most iconic PlayStation duo? And the answers were as follows. It was Ratchet and Clank, Joel and Ellie, Kratos and Atreus, or you could submit your own as a fourth option. So I don't know if you looked at the results of this, Kate, but interestingly enough, Ratchet and Clank, 60% winners over the other duos. Second place was Kratos and Atreus. Joel and Ellie tying for third with our write-in answer from Samuel Adams, who said looking for Jack and Daxter. Of course, we had also a reply from Nathan, who said Mario and Luigi. You know, interesting choice, of course, but no, maybe not PlayStation, but appreciate the sentiment, and the GIF you replied with was fantastic. Everyone go check that out. Of course, we're on Twitter @CNSPod. But interesting results, Kate. I guess Ratchet and Clank makes sense. It's the newest game that's come out of these three, so maybe it's just some recency bias or the fact that they're, you know, those more nostalgic, iconic duo. You know, it's the most nostalgic duo, I guess. Kratos, of course, is an old character, but Atreus is new. So are you surprised? What's your feeling on it?
I was surprised. I think if my personal opinion out of that would have been the Kratos Atreus pick. You know, Joel and Ellie, it's so tough. I'm glad that I didn't have to weigh in on this. But yeah, I think Ratchet and Clank is just a super solid pick, and it outweighs the Jack and Daxter, because you're right, it is a little bit more relevant, and Ratchet looks, they look so good in the new game. They're adorable,
They
and
do.
they deserve that
They
spot.
look great. I think something about the tenure of how long they've been going and just the overall quality of, pretty much every game in the series has been at least good, if not verging on, great for that genre. Obviously, it's not for everybody. But I mean, Joel and Ellie, they only really have one game together so far, or two games, but whatever. It's an interesting debate to have. Jo Kratos and Atreus, of course, coming up strong with Ragnarok, though, so you never know. They might, make it further. Anyways, I think that's going to do us for the show today. Of course, like we said before, if you wish to get in contact, circlesandsquarespod@gmail.com is the email address which you can do so. We're also on Twitter at CNSpod if you wish to participate in future polls. Maybe we'll do some more of these, Kate. This was good to see what people thought and see the community's answers there. So look out for those as well. And until next time, I guess we'll leave it at that. Although we do have, as we promised earlier in the show, a special update, which is an update on the show, actually. We've been going now for quite a while. It's been, what, a year and a half almost? Maybe not quite that much. But we've been talking about how we could expand the show and what we can add and what we can do. And so starting next episode, episode 41, which comes out on October, what is it, the 14th, Kate? The 18th, October 18th. Please look out for us, especially on our YouTube channel, as we are going to be incorporating video content for the first time. We are switching to be video content podcast on YouTube, and then the show will remain the same as it always has been on podcasts. We are also expanding the show, so we're going to be doing more than just a bi-weekly show moving forward from that moment on, although we'll have some more information on that next time. But we're introducing a couple of new shows to our platform as well, so this is very exciting. Anything I forgot to mention here, Kate?
No, I think the rest of it will just leave in a little bit of shroud of mystery. And let you guys kind of stew on what the future might look like.
Ooh, what a way to end it off. But yeah, look forward to that next time. We will update with everything going on. Check us out on the Twitter or the start of next episode for some more details on that. But until next time, everybody, it's been our pleasure to talk to you once more about PlayStation, and we will see you very soon. The intro and outro music for Circles and Squares was produced by friend of the show, Matthew Chan. Interlude music is from Scott Gratton of the Free Music Archive. Our channel art was created by @unreasonable on Twitter, and our brother Alex is the designer of the Circles and Squares logo. Thank you all for listening and supporting the show.